is a young boy who has several coming-of-age experiences throughout the novel. And as I've said before, well, I said it once, it appeals in part to readers of all ages because we're always coming of age. Perhaps we had an important experience at 11 or 12 that, you know, turned our world upside down, but that continues to happen, if we're lucky, continues to happen throughout our lives. We keep learning, and our world continues to grow. So that's its appeal, part of its appeal, but it is so beautifully written. It is, Marjorie's prose is music, and the novel is structured beautifully. It's a work of art. That's why it's still around. It is why people still read it.
Did you read it as a child?
I did. In a way, I grew up in Florida, and I moved there with my family when I was 5 from Washington, D.C. So I'm not a native Floridian, although these days that almost counts, you know, when you move that young. But my 4th grade teacher read the book aloud to our class. She was a true old Floridian with a lovely, sweet musical drawl. And every day after lunch, we'd put our heads on our desks, and she'd read us part of a chapter of The Yearling. But this went on for weeks to get the whole book read. But I fell in love with it then, and then, you know, read it subsequently, and just, you know, loved her writing.
So
from hearing it.
This is your 6th book. You've
yes.
written books about music and musicians. How did you turn to writing a literary biography?
Oh boy, it was suggested to me. I'll back up for a moment and say that all of my academic training, and love and passion was in music, in classical music, and I was a performing musician for quite some years. But in that time, when I was in my 30s, I started to write as well, and thus the early books are, you know, well on some aspect of music. However, 10 years ago now, I'd say, I'll think about it, I met a couple in the Dallas area where I lived at the time. Who were interested in my work, and they'd sponsored a residency for me out in West Texas, working on another book. And it turned out that the husband, Dick Bartlett, had grown up in Florida, close to where I had grown up, and we had these conversations about Rawlings and Central Florida, and it was just magic to run into someone in Texas that had that kind of feeling for Florida. Sometime later, a couple years later, he passed away, and his widow came to me and offered me all of his Florida books, including all of Rawlings. He had everything she'd ever written. And I took them with gratitude and began to reread. And then about a year after that, she said to me, called me one night and said, I think a biography of Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings needs to be written, and you're the one to write it. And I said, sure, I sure am. Yeah, sure, how would this be done? And I was teaching full time at that moment. And she offered me generous funding for the initial research and, you know, so, and work on it. And so I left my teaching job and worked on Marjorie full time. That's how it happened. It was a gift. I say that my friend Joanne Bartlett, who passed in the middle of the writing of this book, was a great matchmaker, matching the writer and the subject, because I never got tired of I just felt blessed. It's the way we say.
So how did you begin your research? Did you head back to Florida because Marjorie followed a similar path to you.
Yes.
She was born in D.C. also and That's lived right. in Florida, although she lived in Wisconsin for a while.
She did. She went to the University of Wisconsin for college in the roughly World War I years. At the time, that English department was, you know, well known, still is a good English department, but had a reputation for being very fine, and so she went there. Her mother accompanied her, and after that, when she was determined to be a writer, to be a poet was her idea, but she moved to New York to make it, like young people do, and worked in publicity and a lot of what we call now hack work. It was often where you start, and married her college sweetheart. They went to Louisville, Kentucky for a while. She worked as a publicist for the YWCA. He worked for a store, and then they went to Rochester, New York, where he was from, and they were there for a few years, and she began writing for the newspapers there. But in 1928, they said, "The heck with it. Let's just get out of the Northeast, get out of the town, get out of journalism, and go someplace and write." And being naive, early in their early 30s at that time, they just bought sight unseen an orange grove in Florida by way of a couple of his brothers who were already there and telling them how wonderful it was. And they went down and they were determined to earn their living by selling oranges, and then they'd have all this time to write. And didn't quite work so easily, but that's how they got to Florida. That's how Marjorie found her place to write out of, as they say.
But her husband wasn't happy there.
He wasn't. He was, you know, willing to go along, and they bought, or Marjorie bought, the grove with the inheritance from her parents. But he was restless. He was more interested in covering water events, which he had been doing in Rochester, yachting events and so forth. So he kept going over to the Gulf Coast and writing about things there and selling stories to magazines in New York. She became successful really fast with her first novel, South Moon Under, and the marriage couldn't take it. Marriage had been volatile anyway, but that was the end of it.
And she was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for that novel, correct?
She, there's nothing on paper that says that, but letters suggest that she was put up for it and that she came very close. And I'll tell you, it is a wonderful novel. It's a beautiful novel. I was amazed. I had not read it before I started this project, and I thought, this is golden. People should read this as well.
Yeah, as I was looking through, I thought, why do you think she did not gain the notoriety that other writers?
She had it while she was living. All of her books were covered by the press as they are now, and well reviewed, well received. Several were put into paperback editions that went to servicemen in World War II. I'm sure you know about that program.
I love those books.
Yeah. Yes. So a lot of servicemen were reading her books. But I think something happens. I'm just sort of improvising here. After an author dies, it's possible that their works go into some kind of eclipse for a while and then are brought back again. That does happen to some authors and some careers, if you will. So I don't know. I think that The Yearling was pegged as a children's book, erroneously, and so adults, unless we read it or were read to as children, weren't attracted to it. But the other books, now Cross Creek, her, which is called, we call it a memoir. It's not quite a memoir, but... a first-person account of the hamlet she lived in Florida and out of which most of her work sprang. that's a lovely book, and that has never left print. And that was also as popular as The Yearling, and in its day more popular. So, I don't know.
Yeah, The Yearling was made into a movie in 1946, Gregory Peck, yes, which I'm sure did not hurt it.
Right.
At our library, our copy of The Yearling is with the adult fiction. It's not in the children's section.
Good for you.
But I know, I know some places it is in the children's section.
Yeah.
At some libraries. So did you spend a lot of time in libraries? Her papers are in Gainesboro, I think I read.
Her papers are in Gainesville, the University of Florida Smathers Library, Special Collections. That's the first place I went. And the first person I called was Florence Turcott, who's the archivist for her papers. And I remember that phone call so vividly. I called and I said, this is what I want to do. And she said, come over here. It's one-stop shopping. And she was right. Marjorie Rawlings left so much to that library, a huge collection of more than, say, 4,000 letters. That's at the heart of it. But all of her manuscripts, you can, little dribs and drabs and sketches and pencil mark out. I mean, you can see her work clearly, and typing and handwritten and so forth. It's amazing to study how she worked. So that I went many, many times to Gainesville. I never lived there, but I would stay there maybe for 3 weeks at a time and come back. And there were other libraries I visited, University of Georgia in Athens, Columbia, South Carolina, University of South Carolina, that had papers of hers or papers relating to her. I'm leaving libraries out, but I also had research assistants in Louisville and Rochester. I did visit Rochester for a week and found so much material I had to hire someone to keep doing it after I left.
Wow.
So anyway, I tried to leave no stone unturned. Other libraries, Huntington, for example, might hold held papers of one of her friends. And so I would contact these libraries and say, are there any letters from Marjorie to so-and-so? And, you know, get them that way. So there's more to be done, I'm sure. But,
I was surprised that I didn't find, and the book I have, it does not have an index. I didn't see anything about the WPA. I would have thought she would have been involved in that. I don't know why.
That's a good thing to bring up. She wasn't, but people she knew were. And, of course, WPA writers were all over Florida during the 30s. Azora Neale Hurston, who eventually became one of Marjorie's friends, was doing work for WPA. And in a sense, that period of time, late 20s, 30s, was a time when people were very interested in old cultures that were going away, you know, Appalachia, the Dust Bowls. Who are these people who live in these small places, and what are they like, and what are their cultures like? And so Marjorie was on the ground in a corner of Florida that hadn't been explored. She was in a way part of that movement. I'm not sure movement's the right word, but there was also a big back-to-the-land movement at that time, sort of nostalgia that often comes when a war has been fought. So she was a writer of her time and place.
She was also among superstars.
Yes.
Maxwell Perkins was one of her editors. And Robert Frost, Thomas Wolfe, Neely Hurston, as you said. Do you think she died in at 57 in 1953? Do you think if she had lived longer, she would have? I don't know.
She sure would have written.
She would have written more. Do you think she... I don't want to say notoriety, because that kind of sounds negative, but...
Do you mean... Are you asking if she would have received more notoriety?
Yeah, do you think...
Possibly. She'd already received, you know, some big awards and so forth.
Or I guess, would she be as well known today as those names are?
I don't know. Do not know.
She and Zora Neale Hurston had a really interesting relationship. They were very close friends.
Yes. Yes, and that relationship, it's not as if they saw each other all the time. They didn't. They were off doing their own things. But Zora was in Florida in the last years of Marjorie's life, anyway. And they met in 1942. At that time, Marjorie, like a lot of white folk, held very conventional views on race. And Marjorie's husband, Norton Baskin, her second husband, ran a luxury hotel in St. Augustine, and his clientele was all white. I'm fixing to tell you about how they met. So the two women met outside at a university in St. Augustine, and Marjorie wanted to invite her to the hotel, to an apartment that she and her husband had there. And there was a fancy dancing to get Zora into the hotel without offending the white clientele. Norton had arranged for one of his assistants to bring her in the front door and escort her to the apartment, where at the same moment, Zora realized what might be happening and let herself in through the back of the hotel up through the kitchen, which, you know, among black employees. She took the rear entrance, let's just say, but, in order to save face, you know, for her friend's husband's hotel. That's how they met. That's how they first got together. They sat there in that apartment and laughed and had drinks and became, you know, pals. Her husband came up and met Zora. That established a friendship that's partly told in letters and partly, you know, visits. But what it did for Marjorie, among other things, was it changed her view of relationships between blacks and whites. She realized this woman was her equal. There was no reason to look down on black people as she had been raised to do. And in a series of letters fascinating to me between her and her husband, because they did write, they were often apart, she did this 180 and changed her views entirely and became an outspoken supporter for civil rights in those days. In the 40s and on, and it gives me goosebumps to think about how, you know, what a big turn that was, what a wonderful meeting that was in so many ways.
How do you think Marjorie would react to the climate today?
Whew. Ah, she would be livid. She would wonder, why is this still going on? You know, why does it persist? She would just be beside herself.
I want to share the cover of your book. Your book is absolutely gorgeous.
I haven't seen it yet. Oh, I'm still waiting for my copy.
Okay, I've just got the advanced copy.
Okay.
So
I've seen this. Yeah.
Yeah. But the cover is just so gorgeous. To me, it's just so evocative of Florida and where she lived and the orange and the orange. She's outside writing and it could be sunset or sunrise. Did you get to have any input?
Yes. I was asked to submit cover art, you know, my ideas for cover art, which is always great when a publisher does that. And so I found there several hundred photographs in Marjorie's archive, and so I went through, and that was one of maybe two or three that I thought would be great. That was my favorite. That one was a publicity photo of the time. It was taken by a photographer named Alan Anderson. Marjorie didn't write outside. She wrote in bed or on a screen porch on a table on her typewriter. But that, so that photo was staged. But so what? it's beautiful because it shows her at Cross Creek. It shows her in that environment out of which she wrote. It's a lovely photo, and the publisher did a wonderful job with the colors, it's a dream cover.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the finished book.
Yeah.
So you're a musician and a librettist.
Mm-hmm.
What setting music would you use for her life or for your book?
Excuse me?
What music would you have as a background if they were going to film your book as a biography?
That is a question out of left field.
Sorry.
I know.
I should have asked it ahead of time.
And now, let's see. Well, part of me would like to hear some folk, you know, Americana. Of the time, the kind of thing that might be heard in little road, you know, roadside places, or maybe even in St. Augustine, with some guitars and some singing, maybe even some spirituals, which she knew and she came to love as she attended black churches as her consciousness, as an attempt and a successful one to raise her consciousness, as we would say. But she also loved classical music, and she would attend concerts of a visiting orchestra, say in Jacksonville, or when she was in New York, she would go to the theater. And I would say maybe some Beethoven, some a slow movement from a sonata, Beethoven sonata might be appropriate. We could mix and match through
sure.
her life.
That's
a really good question.
I thought of Aaron Copland when I saw the cover.
Perfect. Perfect.
I didn't know if it was too.
Right. Yeah, especially if you know Appalachian Spring, which is performed a lot. And I just heard that piece again last week, and it makes me cry. It makes me weep every time. The simplicity of it. It evokes the West or the Midwest, maybe, but I think it evokes everything America. So, I think you answered the question better than I did.
What do you read when you read?
Woo.
Or do you not read while you're writing?
No, I read while I'm writing. Although when I was working on Marjorie, it seemed that I was reading only books that had to do with her life, and so when the manuscript was turned in, I went crazy. Now I can just do anything I want, read anything I want. But I read novels. I just read Elizabeth Strout's second novel. I guess it's her second, Abide With Me. I also highly recommend Joanne Beard's latest book of essays, Festival Days. Love that book. So those are two recent ones. I mix around. I read creative nonfiction, which is what I taught for a long time. Biographies, good fiction. Right now, I am reading, and I love this. This is sort of a one example of my shelf. The Art Spirit by Robert Henri, I guess that's what you say, how you say his name, an art teacher in New York in the early part of the 20th century. And so this is a book about how to make art, an artistic, how to develop your artistic self, I suppose. There's a lot in here about painting and brush strokes and the subject and masses on the easel and so forth. But I love reading any creative person's ideas about how to make things, and I like translating from the art world. No, so a brushstroke is, what is that? A brushstroke is what to a sentence or to a line of music. That's a strong interest of mine. So, yeah,
creativity. Can you talk a little bit about your opera?
The upcoming opera.
Upcoming.
Yeah. It's called The Dreamer, and it is based on a recurring dream I had for many years, 20-something years ago. The basic story is a woman is stranded at the top of a tower, a very high tower, and there's a lot of weather around her, you know, storms and hurricanes, and the tower is metal and there's a lot of clanging and so forth, and she tries repeatedly to climb down off the tower, and every time she gets down a couple rungs, a hand shoots out from under a tent and grabs her foot and forces her back up to the top. Well, eventually she makes it down past the tented man, I call him in the opera. She makes it down gradually with doubts and fears and so on. But she finally makes it down to the ground, and she's grounded, if you will. In the opera, she has there's a character called the confidant, which you might, you know, also say is her inner voice, however you want to interpret it, who encourages her. And then there's a small chorus of voices who echo what's going on, a sort of a Greek chorus, if you will, but not exactly. So those are the characters, the dreamer, the tented man, the confidant, and the little chorus. And it's in five little movements. The whole thing is 30 minutes. It's a drama of a woman coming to herself, I suppose. Someone said it was very Jungian. I said, well, it was a recurring dream, and it did resolve when one night I dreamed that I got onto the ground, and a friend was there waiting for me and took my hand, and we took a walk. That's how the real dream ended. Now it's a little opera.
Well, and it will be online if people are interested.
Yes, it will.
Excellent. So is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about Marjorie?
She was in many ways a woman ahead of her time. She, and that's one reason I liked her so much. When you write a biography, you better be writing about someone who you like or enjoy, because you're going to spend years with them, right? You don't want to be with someone you dislike or are bored by. I was never bored. She was gutsy. She was determined to be a literary writer and write her best and do her best. And she would have done masterful work no matter where she lived, I believe. She once said that had her father lived, her father died young, and he had a farm in Maryland, if he had lived, she would have written about that farm. But she ended up in Florida, so her gifts would develop wherever she decided to settle. She had friends, men and women in Florida, who were very independent, outdoorsy. She learned to hunt, fish. She went on an alligator catching trip. Didn't catch an alligator, but she went. She did stride everything at least once. And she was very, very independent, at the service of her writing always. I like her. I like her a lot. I still do. I wish she were around.
Good. Well, The Life She Wished to Live will be out May 11th, and the library will have a copy of it.
Fantastic.
I did buy a couple copies of it for the library, but you might want to go out and buy it too, because it's fun to pick up. I've had it for several months, and it's just fun to pick up at different times and kind of just see what strikes you.
Yes. Yeah.
The chapters are almost like little vignettes into her life. So just whatever you feel at the time, you just
The book is chronological. I mean, most biographies are, to some extent, chronological. But I also work to make it episodic as well, so that I had no problem with that because her life was episodic, and so in a chapter that covers 2 years, for example, her coming to consciousness about race, those couple of years that's the focus of that chapter. And of course, other things went on, and other things I've reported went on. But that was the main event for about 2 years. And that's why you can probably, if you wanted to, open to any chapter and start there and read a sort of a complete, almost a complete piece that I can't say that it'd stand on its own, but almost.
No, I think you should read it cover to cover first, but then you can dip back in and find different things.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I want to thank Anne McCutcheon very much for spending the time. She's a couple hours earlier than we are, so I really appreciate it. So thank you very much, and best of luck with your opera.
Thank you so much. This is great.
Best of luck with your book.
All right,
great
talk.
Nice talking to you. Thanks so much, and I hope after you're traveling again, I will be able to see you maybe at a book signing or one of your operas.
I'll give you a holler. I would love that. I can't wait to travel.
Yes.
It'll be
cool. All right. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep. Okay. That was author Anne McCutcheon. Of The Life She Wished to Live, a biography of Marjorie Kinnon Rawlings. And before we get back to the library, I will play some news and a couple of station IDs.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
President Biden, in his first joint session of Congress speech Wednesday night, says corporate America will see tax increases.
But it's time for corporate America and the wealthiest 1% of Americans to just begin to pay their fair share. Just their fair share.
I'm not looking to punish anybody, but I will not add a tax burden, additional tax burden, to the middle class in this country. They're already paying enough.
Republican Senator Tim Scott disputes Biden's claim Americans are systemic racists.
Jews are being taught that the color of their skin defines them again. Hear me clearly. America is not a racist country. It's backwards to fight discrimination with different types of discrimination.
Vaccine maker BioNTech expects results by September from trials testing the COVID-19 vaccine for babies as young as 6 months old. USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Jay Schrader, Super Bowl 22 champion and former Raiders quarterback. Playing professional football for 11 years beat my body up pretty bad. I've had so many surgeries on my neck, back, and shoulders and knees, I've just learned to live with constant discomfort. I tried so many products, some worked for a little while, but nothing gave me total relief until one day, a golfing buddy introduced me to Sons of Liberty CBD.com. I used their CBD Muscle Ease, rubbed it on my hands and neck, and wow, what did it do for me? I immediately began using their other products, and I have golfed pain-free for the first time in many years. I've reached out to Sons of Liberty CBD and visited their operation from farm to factory. Folks, this team walks the walk. Their motto is, for vets, by vets. I shared the product with my friend Wayne Allen Root, and now he's a fan of Sons of LibertyCBD.com. Wayne's fans will receive a 15% discount using code WAR15 at checkout. I've told all my NFL buddies about Sons of LibertyCBD.com, and now I'm telling you. Go to Sons of LibertyCBD.com. When it works for you, like it did for me, we both win.
Running around naked or streaking was a fad from the 70s in America we all sort of chuckled at. The two streakers at this year's Super Bowl football game in front of tens of millions around the world are not laughing now. A judge has thrown out their plea deal. Tim Berg from the Phoenix USA Radio News Bureau has more.
A judge is rejecting a proposed plea deal for the two men accused of going streaking on the field at this year's Super Bowl. An attorney for the two men had said there was a deal with prosecutors to plead guilty to misdemeanor trespassing for their crime committed in front of 96 million people on national TV. However, a Florida judge said the agreement, which included 6 months of probation, was too lenient and threw it out. The judge has rescheduled the case for next month.
Typical punishments reportedly include a criminal trespass charge, one night of jail time, and a lifetime ban from the venue. In Ohio, be careful. Streaking onto any professional field can earn you up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, and I want to tell you that arthritis is not a genetic thing. It's not a disease of aging. Neither is osteoporosis. Get a hold of my book. It's All in Your Head. It goes into the 25 different diseases you get when you have osteoporosis of the skull. These are all reversible. You take the Healthy Bone and Joint Pack, the MSM, vitamin D3, stay away from all the bad foods, including gluten, and guess what? You'll regrow all your bones, including your skull and your legs and your hips and everything else. Contact us at usaradiohealth.com. That's usaradiohealth.com.
Counterfeit vaccine cards. Why is this a problem? Tim Berg from the Phoenix USA Radio News Bureau explains.
As Americans continue to be vaccinated, the fight against fake vaccination cards continues. 42 bipartisan attorneys generals across the country are raising concerns about the public health risks associated with fraudulent cards. North Carolina Attorney General Josh Stein says these fake vaccine cards are a huge issue.
This is incredibly problematic because it will damage people's health. More people will get the virus, pass it on to others if there is widespread use of fake vaccine cards.
The Democrat also telling ABC's Good Morning America that sites like OfferUp and eBay are working with him and other attorneys generals to prevent fraudulent or blank COVID-19 cards from being sold.
We've heard back from the four we contacted. They all indicated they want to cooperate and rid their websites of these cards.
COVID-19 vaccines are free to consumers and vaccination providers because the federal government paid manufacturers to produce and deliver vaccines. Now that NASA's Ingenuity Mars helicopter has accomplished the goal of achieving powered, controlled flight of an aircraft on the Red Planet, and with the data from its most recent test flight, the project has met or surpassed all of its technical objectives. The Ingenuity Mars helicopter was built by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. For USA Radio News, I'm Lance Pry.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.HuntertonChamberRadio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Welcome back to At the Library. I'm Jennifer Winberry. And if you are just tuning in, I just did an interview with author Anne McCutcheon, whose book, The Life She Wished to Live, a biography of Marjorie Kinnon Rawlings, author of The Yearling, will be out on May 11th. I will be posting the Zoom interview to the library's website later this afternoon. There were some technical difficulties, and it didn't want to share. Jim Gano will be in at 1 p.m. with his show, Taking Care of Business. So hang around and come on back. So every year at this time, my former co-host, Jim Thatch, would normally do his stretch call for the Kentucky Derby. And I didn't think to call him and ask him to do it ahead of time. So we'll have to, I'm going to email him, and we'll have to get his picks for the Kentucky Derby, which is set to run this Saturday, the 147th running. And I'll run down the horses real fast, and then we'll see if Jim, if you're listening, send me an email. I don't think you are, but and I'm reading them down by post position. Known Agenda, Like the King, Brooklyn Strong, Keep Me in Mind, Sainthood, Obesos, Mandalone, Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, Midnight Bourbon, Dynamic One, Helium, Hidden Stash, Essential Quality, Rock Your World, King Fury, Highly Motivated, Superstock, Soup and Sandwich, and Bourbonic. And it looks like known agenda with 6-to-1 odds. Well, Essential Quality has 2-to-1 odds. Rock Your World, 5-to-1, and Known Agenda, 6-to-1. I kind of am liking Brooklyn Strong and Sainthood, but that's just me. So we will see. See how it goes, see how they run. And we'll see how Jim did next week. So, some new things at the library. I just heard today some exciting news. Tewksbury Library will now be open on Fridays. Up till now, they've only been doing curbside on Fridays. So starting next week, they will be open on Fridays from 9 until 5. They'll be open Tuesday through Thursday 9 to 6, Friday 9 to 5, and Saturday 9 to 12. And you can do curbside on Mondays and Fridays from 9 to 1 if you just want to pick it up. Call in and have them pull your books for you. And that's the other exciting news, is that the Hunterdon County Library will no longer be quarantining your materials when they're returned. You still have to return them to the book drop, but we will just bring them in and check them right back in, which is good because they will not be staying on your account for a long time, and you won't be concerned that overdue fines, and it will also move the hold lists along a little bit quicker. So those are two exciting developments. Stay tuned. They'll be coming fast and furious. April is Poetry Month. We had a poetry contest. You still have until tomorrow to enter a poem, your original poem, to dneubauer at hclibrary.us, and all this is on our website, hclibrary.us. There'll be 3 HC staff who will score the poems on a scale of 0 to 10. You may have one poem of no more than 20 lines on any subject and style. Content must be family-friendly and the original individual work of the entrant. All poems will be posted on our Facebook page, with your name or your initials, however you choose. There'll be adults and under 18. And gift cards were donated by Mark at City Spot Coffee and Tea in Clinton. And winners will be announced on May 5th. So you still have 2 days to get in your poems. And they can be found on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and on the library, on the Instagram story, they're usually posted. A new program that the library, actually it's not new, but the library is starting up an English conversation group again. We had one 2 years ago now. But if you're studying English as a second language, we're going to have a virtual English conversation group where you can practice your speaking and listening skills in an informal atmosphere. It meets every Thursday online at 1 o'clock. To sign up, visit the events calendar, hclibrary.events.info, or just click on the calendar on our website, or call the library at 730-6135 to get the link and to make reservations. And it's a really safe environment where you can just practice your English skills, ask questions. English can be a tricky language, even though for those of us who have been speaking it since birth. We have some on-demand technology classes for beginners done by Paul D'Angelo. It's a series of 7 classes that he had recorded. Let's see. There are Google Drive basics, files and folders, PowerPoint basics, mastering the iPhone, mastering Android, Excel and Word Basic, and they can be found on our YouTube channel. Just search Hunterdon County Library. Paul owns Lifeline Repairs, which fixes both iPhones and Android phones and computers. He's been in the IT industry for over 20 years, and he's an adjunct professor at Raritan Valley Community College. And also coming up, we're going to have, in addition to our monthly book groups, which are still meeting in Zoom, there'll be a classic book group, Revisiting the Classics with Virtual Discussions, led by experts in the field. And starting with The Catcher in the Rye Experience, the 2 days in the life of 16-year-old Holden Caulfield after he has been expelled from prep school. Confused and disillusioned, Holden searches for truth and rails against the phoniness of the adult world. And, of course, it's by J.D. Salinger. It is going to be led by Mr. Scott Ebner. He's an English instructor at Raritan Valley Community College, and he's also the vice principal at Hunterdon Central Regional High School. And that will be Tuesday, May 25th at 7 p.m., and register on our events calendar to get the link. The Amateur Photography Show is still up online. You can click to click through the different abstract and still life, black and white, to see all the different categories and to see the best in show, which was a picture of a duck by Margaret Ricketts. Let's see. In-person programming is not stopping Fred Miller, the pianist storyteller. His lectures and song continue on May 19th at 2 p.m. Judy Garland was Hollywood's greatest female musical star, a doe-eyed girl with a genius for singing. For 15 years, she was MGM's leading lady. The recording of this live virtual concert will be available afterwards. And then there's also a link on our homepage to his other concerts. He's been going through the decades. So there's a concert for the 1920s, Happy Days Are Here Again, 1930s, Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf, 1938 to 45, World War II and the Big Bands, 1946 to 56, Music, 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 and then 57 to 64, Try to Remember. On April 28th, kitchen historian Dana Balla will discuss how cookbooks, recipes, grandma's recipe box, and treasured community cookbooks affected family life, the community, and American culture from the 1970s to the 1960s. Dana will have vintage cookbooks, utensils, and aprons for show and tell. So if you love those, the community cookbooks that you sometimes find at a rummage sale or a flea market, maybe your church put one together or your ladies' group, this is the perfect program for you. Dana has presented at historic sites throughout New Jersey, and she volunteers at Washington's Crossing State Park. So you want to, again, go to our website to get a link to that. We are now offering personal reader's advisory. There's a box on the right-hand side of our webpage, an icon. Welcome to the Hunterdon County Library's Personal Reader's Advisory Service. Fill out this brief form, and our librarians will compile a list of book titles based on the information you provide. You will be contacted according to your preferred mode of communication with the list, and all approved titles will be held on your card and sent to your branch of choice for pickup. The form is confidential and designed for adult readers. So, your name, your library card number, what format do you prefer, book, large print, audiobook? How many titles would you like us to select, fiction or nonfiction? What type of fiction do you like, fantasy, historical fiction, literary fiction, mystery, cozy or more gritty, detective, romance, suspense, thriller, science fiction? What kind of nonfiction do you like, biographies, memoir, business, cookbooks, DIY, women's history, travel, technology? Is there something you read recently and enjoyed? And what did you like about the book? Are there elements you try to avoid when picking out a book, such as violence, swearing, explicit sex? Are there any types of books you don't want? Who are your favorite authors? Are you looking for only newer books published in the last year? And is there anything else you'd like us to know? So fill that out, and one of our librarians will pick some books and send you a list of what they think you might like, and then you can pick from that. And we will gather the books up for you, and you can pick them up. That needs to come down. There's a Genealogy from Home link on the front website. Join New Jersey State Genealogy Librarian Regina Fitzpatrick as she covers what you currently have access to at the State Library, State Archives, and County Offices. There's also a link to the documents, what you can do from home. And this is really helpful because many people are used to coming into the library and looking for books or using Ancestry.com at the library. The library does subscribe to it. But these are some things, if you're still not ready to come out, that you can look at home. We have all our online databases, Libby and Overdrive, and that's where our magazines live now, our electronic magazines, along with our audiobooks and ebooks. And Canopy continues to add movies every week. This week, Anna Karenina was recently added, of Human Bondage. Ben-Hur, Wuthering Heights. The Saint was added just recently, Paul Newman's Nobody's Fool. And John Wayne, True Grit. And all these are available with your Hunterdon County Library card. We also have Creative Bug. It's a go-to resource for high-quality, on-trend arts and crafts, instructional videos on drawing, painting, sewing, knitting, crochet, quilting, baking, and more. These classes are taught by experts. You get instruction and inspiration so that you can learn at your own pace. And we use Creative Bug as a jumping-off point every month for a take-home craft. Available at Headquarters North County and South County Branch Libraries. This past month was a recycled water, a beverage bottle soda, or a plastic bottle soda, or water, with a couple of well-placed dowels and a couple of holes cut out. You fill it with birdseed and hang it up in your trees and watch the birds come to your house. We have children's take-home crafts every month. There is a listen, take, and make for Miss Kathy. You stop by at Headquarters North County or South County Branch Library to pick up your craft while supplies last. And then you can watch the story time on YouTube. There's a grab-and-go kit, Earth Day Upcycling, in honor of Earth Day. There's reusing library items to make a shark and a jellyfish. And there's also a grab-and-go photo holder. For that, you have to register online. And it looks like the April one the registration for that has closed. But watch for the May one coming very soon. So the website is updated frequently. So check that out. Check out our library's Facebook page, our Instagram, and Twitter. Those links are all at the top of our page, and the library's YouTube channel to get all the latest going on. Oh, and something new was just posted on Instagram 2 hours ago. Clear the Clutter by Memorial Day with Jamie Novick on Wednesday, May 26th at 7 p.m. Go from feeling frazzled to being in control with 10 tiny decluttering projects that can be done in one weekend. To register for the program, go to our website, hclibrary.us, and register online. That's pretty ambitious. But she says you can do it in one weekend. So definitely take a look at that. Next weekend, I will be back with another author discussing the history of home economics. The Secret History of Home Economics, again published by Norton. Danielle Dreilinger is the author, and it talks about how trailblazing women harness the power of home and changed the way we live. The surprising, often fiercely feminist, always fascinating, yet barely known history of home economics. And the book is really, really fascinating, so definitely tune in next week to hear the conversation with Danielle. Jim Gannot will be in at 1 p.m. to take care of some business. And until then, remember, wherever you are, you can call, stop in, or go online. The library is always there for you. Have a good afternoon.
USA Radio News with Lance Pride.
Federal investigators on Wednesday seized cell phones and computers from Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York City and presidential lawyer. Rudy's son, Andrew Giuliani, called it nothing but politics.
If this can happen to the former president's lawyer, this can happen to any American. Enough is enough. The only piece of evidence that they did not take up there today was the only piece of incriminating evidence that is in there. And it does not belong to my father. It belongs to the current president's son.
The FBI reportedly refused to take the hard drive belonging to President Biden's son, Hunter, with suspected incriminating evidence on the Biden family. Officials have canceled mandatory evacuation orders from a wildfire in the Castaic area. That's northwest of downtown Los Angeles, California. About 2 p.m. Pacific on Wednesday, the L.A. County Fire Department posted on Twitter the North Fire had grown to 650 acres with 0% containment. The cause is still under investigation. USA Radio News.
America's great cities are in deep trouble. Businesses are closing, taxpayers fleeing, and police are defunded as crime and homelessness rise. It's a dangerous time in big cities like New York, L.A., Chicago, Seattle, San Francisco, and more. All this week, Rob Schmidt is on Newsmax TV, exposing the real truth in his series, Cities on Fire. Every night, Rob Schmidt gives you the real news you won't hear anywhere else. So watch Rob Schmidt tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern and see his Cities on Fire special. Newsmax TV is on all major cable systems. If you don't get it, call your cable system. Tell them you want Newsmax or you can switch. Plus, get Newsmax free on most smart TVs like Samsung, Sony, and LG. Or tune in on Roku, Pluto, Zumo, and YouTube Live. And millions have already downloaded the free Newsmax TV app on their smartphones. So start watching America's fastest-growing cable news channel. Because Newsmax is real news for real people.
President Biden, in his first address to a nearly empty joint session of Congress Wednesday night, laid out his vision for America.
If we act to save the planet, we can create millions of jobs and economic growth and opportunity to raise the standard of living amongst everyone around the world. If you watched any of it and you were all busy, I'm sure you didn't have much time. That's what virtually every nation said, even the ones that aren't doing their fair share.
Republican Senator Tim Scott disputes Biden's claim that the new Georgia voting laws are Jim Crow laws.
The state of Georgia passed a law that expands early voting, preserves no-excuse mail-in voting, and despite what the president claimed, did not reduce Election Day hours. If you actually read this law, it's mainstream. It will be easier to vote early in Georgia than in Democrat-run New York. But the left doesn't want you to know that. They want people virtue signaling by yelling about a law they haven't even read.
USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
More takeaways from President Biden's speech Wednesday night in Washington. Dan Naraki from the Ohio USA Radio News Bureau reports.
President Joe Biden made the first major address of his presidency Wednesday night before a joint session of Congress. In the speech, he laid out his legislative agenda, calling for action on infrastructure, gun control, and police reform. He also urged Congress to work on those issues in a bipartisan manner.
I wanted to lay out before the Congress my plan before we got into the deep discussions. I'd like to meet with those who have ideas that are different, they think are better. I welcome those ideas.
During the Republican response to the speech, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott said the president's policies have done more to pull the nation further apart.
He promised to unite a nation, to lower the temperature, to govern for all Americans, no matter how we voted. This was the pitch. You just heard it again. But our nation is starving for more than empty platitudes. We need policies and progress that brings us closer together. But 3 months in, the actions of the president and his party are pulling us further and further apart.
Biden's speech was in front of a nearly empty chamber as lawmakers continue to struggle with COVID-19. Federal prosecutors executed a search warrant Wednesday at the apartment of Rudy Giuliani, advancing an investigation into former President Trump's personal lawyer and his dealings with Ukraine. Authorities seized Giuliani's electronic devices during the early morning searches at both his home and law office. USA Radio News, I'm Lance Pryde.